Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Nothing gets me more excited for a pay-per-view, especially a brand new title, WrestleDream, than A-plus hype for the main event, or at least the absence of anything to critique, because we had the absence of anything to critique on this show. Bryan Danielson, Zack Sabre Jr. have been talking, you know, all week. Is that going to be the match that ends the show? Online, Zack Sabre Jr. cuts this killer promo from Japan. You got to watch it online. Bryan Danielson stepping up to kind of fill the gap left by CM Punk and doing great work with Ricky Starks. What happened? All we got were graphics and passing mentions, right? Did I fast forward past the high budget video package explaining the backstory here and why they aren't just telling us it's a dream match, but letting everybody know, the vast audience that they're marketing to, why it's a dream match and what the personal issue is? Tyler, what honestly, did I miss something?
No, and I was hoping you weren't going to ask me what I think the main event of WrestleDream is going to be, because like, I certainly don't think it's going to be Paige and Swerve, but you know, I've been, as you know, Wade, and the audience, I'll tell you, I've been out of the country for the last couple of weeks, so I was getting caught up on wrestling through some great Torch VIP podcasts. So thank you for that, Wade.
But I hope you paused there dramatically. I'm like, what's he going to say?
But yeah, so honestly, after watching tonight and not watching Dynamite and Collision Live the last couple episodes, I didn't know that was a match, and I think that is kind of a good way to look at this pay-per-view if you're not, you know, one of the 190,000 to 110,000 people that buy every single AEW pay-per-view, myself included, that you are not, you know, penetrating an audience to sell to the, you know, I guess above hardcore fan, the kind of right below casual, but like someone who's interested in WWE and AEW but doesn't buy pay-per-views, that I know you get emails from and I interact with a lot, that people are not going to buy this pay-per-view. And it was not sold on this episode. And, you know, until you said it just now to open the show here, I honestly can tell you that I forgot that match was happening, because I don't know if your version of Dynamite sounded like, you know, Neo entering the Matrix a couple times cut off several times. But I think even that promo for that match, it was cut off of my feed because of something with the feed. So, yeah, not ideal, I would say, if you're trying to put that as a dream match. Maybe Collision will hit for that, but, you know, you got to hit it at least a little bit on Dynamite, I would say.
Yeah, this was a weird show, and we'll get into the lack of – well, maybe we'll get – I mean, there's not a lot to say about it other than, wow, you didn't talk about – I mean, it was the first match they talked about on the graphic, and it was the one that most people, you know, just anecdotally thought would headline. You know, our rationale, by the way, on various podcasts last week or two has been, oh, Danielson's from Seattle. And then I realized on this show how many people on the lineup are from Seattle. You got Darby and Swerve, too. So that really isn't the tipping point. Although Danielson is really well known for, you know, being from that area. Although, you know, Darby in the AEW universe is too. So, it's a bit of a head scratcher. But this was a weird show, because we had, I don't think we're bearing the lead by talking about the fact that they didn't promote Danielson and Zack Sabre. But, you know, Adam Cole saying he needs surgery. He blew up his knee, tore ligaments, broke bones, and it's just basically, you know, made it sound like his – all he did is jump off a ramp. This scares me. I don't want to jump off anything anymore after what he went through. You know, it was just a very basic jump from the ramp onto the floor, and everything fell apart. Between that and Aaron Rodgers, it's like, I'm just going to like, you know, walk very, very gingerly and take no chances in life if I don't end up in a wheelchair or a cast. But it does seem like we're never going to know how the Cole MJF thing would have played out if it played out now. It'll play out later, and that might be the same, might be different, although I get the feeling they were kind of winging it anyway, or, you know, certainly called audibles along the way because it was going so well. But a deflating moment to have, you know, basically Adam Cole go, I'm going to get back as fast as I can, but I need surgery. They didn't put a timetable on it. I thought it was suspicious. A lot of people I asked over the past week in AEW about it just didn't get back to me or wouldn't say anything. And you know, I figured, you know, they're like, oh, we'll address it on Wednesday is the answer I got. So, you know, I wasn't optimistic that this was going to be good news because you just go, well, he's fine if he's fine. So that's a bummer. It did lead to MJF and Jay White having a long talking segment, and I want to analyze that for sure and, you know, get into what we liked and didn't like about it. But it was also kind of weird, too, that, you know, Jon Moxley last week was part of that match that led to the issues. And, you know, we didn't get an update on him, and he had a concussion diagnosis last week. So just kind of a weird show in that sense. A lot was going on, but I did not expect it to end with a contract signing segment. And yeah. I didn't expect Julia Hart Willow to be the last match. I don't think Willow being a job, you know, doing the job in 8 minutes so Julia can extend her streak a few days before a pay-per-view match is the best use of Willow with the momentum that she has. But she did get at least to be in the final match on a Dynamite. You know, both of them did. So it's just a kind of a weird show. So Tyler, just, you know, pluck anything from what I just kind of brought up and maybe give your macro thoughts also on this episode and the vibe and feeling you've got coming out of it from your unique perspective of kind of being a little bit, you've never been out of the live watching loop of AEW and all their, so you kind of come back with a little different perspective too.
Yes, for sure. And it's one that is jarring and kind of confusing. And I think that's kind of how most people that try and latch onto the product and maybe give it a shot feel was in that nothing seems, I mean, even this was not a super fast paced episode. It was paced more like a collision, which I think is not a negative. It just felt different, as you said. And, you know, besides the I'm trying to rack my brain and think of any Dynamite that had four matches like tonight's episode, besides the show, I think it was the first Grand Slam. It was Danielson and Paige had the hour draw. I think that also had four matches, but that is very strange for Dynamite as well. And I don't even think that's a bad thing. It's just some of the things that were a little different here tonight. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. Like, I was up and down emotionally where, you know, why would they show the Adam Cole and MJF video where he's going to turn on him maybe on the boat when he's going to be off TV for months on end now? Oh, that was a strange decision because, like, I know it's in the can, but you don't have to show it just because it's there, because that threw everything off and made me think that this is some sort of swerve, even though it's not, because they wouldn't change the match. And then the change to the MJF handicap match against the Righteous is super confusing. And then Jay White comes out and I'm like, oh, cool, they're pivoting to this. You're going to do a quick build, but this is going to be the main event. It's going to save the pay-per-view. This is going to be awesome. I'm super excited about it. And then it's still, you know, on the graphic, there's no, it's just MJF and the Righteous. And I'm like, what is happening here? Cause like there are things that you could have cleaned up and pivoted and kind of been like all out where you think after all, everything happened, all in all the bad vibes and then the no build. And then that show is actually fantastic. I was like, okay, maybe they're going to make lemonade out of the situation. And it doesn't seem like that was the pivot that was taken. And then, yeah, I mean, just so many other things with that and the signing, and I'm sure we'll talk about that, but I was underwhelmed by that as a main event, and it seemed thrown together. So yeah, a lot of different things. It's a very strange episode, and also the booking pattern of your combatants. You know, a 3-way match and then a 4-way match. In the 4-way match, you have all your people that are going to wrestle on Sunday. Felt very WWE, where hey, we got to fill a go home show, and nothing really matters on this in the ring, so we'll just have this, and it doesn't matter. So it felt very much like that, top to bottom, being either strange or not important, which is not typically how a Dynamite is, even before a pay-per-view.
Yeah. And, you know, when looking at the lineup ahead of time, there just wasn't a lot that they announced ahead of time either. The lineup was weird. When Nick Jackson came out, and I didn't memorize whether it was Nick or Matt in the match that was announced. I mean, I typed up the preview. I typed Matt's name, but I was like, oh, it must have been Nick, not Matt. I'm like, oh, wait, this is only a 3-way, and the other people aren't in there. I thought that the unannounced 3-way was actually a replacement for the 4-way, and they had completely reshuffled the card. And then I was, oh, wait, that's Penta, not Phoenix. That's Matt, not Nick. And I was just, you know, just got confused. But it was one of those shows where it's like there's just things happening that didn't feel like it got built up. And, I mean, Okay. In fairness to Tony Khan, if Mox is out with the concussion, at least getting a week off, he's got a show where there's some Japanese talent, and you know, there's only so much you can do with, you know, wrestlers who aren't super oriented to the AEW English speaking fan base and can't cut English speaking promos. Okay, there's some of that going on. You're probably, you know, reeling from the bad luck of Adam Cole going down and try to regroup from that. I mean, there's just a lot going on, but. And, you know, Jade Cargill, you know, WWE celebrating and Jade saying, I love AEW, but they're not going to be able to make me the star that WWE can. And, you know, I went there because of the ownership and the agency and I'm the first big TKO signing and they're celebrating that. And she's all over the place. And, you know, she said, Cody's one of the top three reasons I went, which, you know, it's like, oh, who else is tight with Cody, who Cody's sending good word to? It's just, it wasn't AEW's week. And then you have Tony Khan, you know, on his media Q&A, which, by the way, we're going to put on at the end of this show, the full audio of Tony Khan's media Q&A. So everyone stay tuned for that. He recorded that yesterday. And, you know, in that, you know, he said, we have – people say we don't have the best storylines. We have more storylines than anyone. And I was like, more storylines doesn't mean you're telling the best stories currently or in your, you know, in your history. Telling more doesn't mean better. And, he is really focused on the how people react to the quality of the matches when the pay-per-views are over. And not either wanting to address in any way that maybe there's some things going on the TV shows. Doesn't mean they're not enjoyable TV shows, but just in terms of the coherence and pacing and logic and themes of some of the storylines that they're telling give off a vibe of a lot of things not being real sharp right now, but you know, some of it is just too meta, like a lot of the MJF stuff. It was entertaining, but it's very meta. You know, we'll get into that. But also, some of what's going on is the idea that great matches make up for a lot of characters and feuds not feeling like they're playing out at a compelling pace, and the wrestlers not really coming across as big stars. I think having Hangman and Swerve sit opposite each other with the spotlight on them is a way to make them seem like a star. Julie Hart with a winning streak and getting a cool entrance is cool. The Righteous's vignettes are good. I mean, there's some building blocks that they have, but there's in Tony Khan's comments, it didn't seem like he's willing to show any introspection if he is going through that at all in terms of what's going on with the product. Another crowd. Maybe past 3,000. Maybe they got past the 3,000 mark with walk up today, but WrestleTix had them just under that earlier today as the estimate. And you know, to me, that's a bigger signal of what's going on in AEW than selling out Wembley, which was a novelty show, first time in that market, first time for a lot of those fans to see those stars in person. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was. I enjoyed the show. I WrestleDream's going to be a good in-ring product, but I just don't. And things are working against them, and I know that, and they're trying to adjust to that. But this just felt like a show that might have been the product of Tony Khan spreading himself too thin, trying to produce too many hours of TV and too many pay-per-views without accounting for the fact that he's playing to an ultra-hardcore, small audience with some of the ways that he's promoting this show especially. And he's not accounting for the fact that if you lose CM Punk and you lose Jade Cargill – there's going to be other injuries. It's pro wrestling. Does he have the depth? Has he created the bench to step up? You know, we can talk about whether Hangman and Swerve did that tonight in the main segment, but I don't know. I'm hesitating to go full circle back to this because there is a way that they can do all of that they're doing and have it be better, but it's a lot easier to put on a great 2-hour show a week and 4 pay-per-views a year than it is to put out the quantity that they're trying to right now. And I think this is one of those time periods, kind of in general, even though Sunday show is probably going to be great, entertainment in ring wise, that you wonder where AEW would be right now if it was a good 2-hour Dynamite every week. And that was it. And they had a cadence of 4, even 6 pay-per-views a year, but they were, you know, solid name brands spread out every 2 months. And they featured not dream matches for the 3,000 most hardcore fans. And I obviously Forbidden Door did really good numbers. So it's not just 3,000, but the hype is assuming knowledge. That's a very small audience that has it. And I just do wonder where AEW would be right now if they had focused more on that. And there's negatives that come along with it, Tyler. Obviously, if they don't have more hours of TV, they get less of a TV deal. But But, man, I said from the beginning, doing Collision was going to challenge their ability to draw good crowds for TV with high energy every week, and that was going to hurt the product in some intangible or tangible ways, I guess. So, anyway, Tyler, didn't mean to go off quite that long with just some thoughts. I feel like I'm at a therapist talking about AEW, but it was a weird show, and there's been a lot going on with them this past week. And you'll get to hear Tony's own words after we're done here. But go ahead, Tyler, with anything else you want to add there.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with anything you're saying. I think you laid out pretty well. And, you know, I don't, you know, I think AEW is, you know, healthy from a financial standpoint as a company. I don't think it's going to collapse and get purchased by, you know, this is not WCW, right? But it does feel like the point, and if you're writing the book, you're writing the story, that this is where, you know, you get that sort of, if it is a pivot point from, you know, like an 18-month pivot point, not a one-week pivot point, that we're kind of in the first third of that here, of what this company is going to be. Is it going to be the Main Event Mafia of TNA, where, you know, all those people are coming in and that whole story, and then it becomes a lesser product that was getting millions and millions of people on Spike TV watching it, and now it is what it is. You know, is it some upper version of that, and it's always a distant number two? Or is there a way to find some momentum on the back of WWE, maybe, you know, not being on Fox, et cetera, and having some issues with the TKO deal that you take advantage of? And, you know, we're talking a year from now that AEW is actually the hotter product and that WWE's cooled down, whatever. But, you know, the main point there that I think we all reiterate a lot is that the growth, you know, too fast and too much. And, you know, Tony Khan's comments, I don't think it was on the one that you're going to post after this. Maybe it was, where he's like at 80 hours a week and he's not happy that he's happy with that, but he could work more is kind of where his comments. And I think that's just not healthy for any human to have that mindset, Vince McMahon or Tony Khan included. But, you know, you're definitely stretching yourself thin, and it's showing, and there's no human, you know, it is proof that Tony Khan is a human being. So that's good. That, you know, no one can work that much and have good quality there. So, yeah. I mean, it's the easiest way. I mean, you can see that the ratio of quality has gone down since, you know, you look at Rampage and beyond that, and the addition of the pay-per-views too, is like, it's kind of it seems kind of like a joke to at least me, as someone that analyzes the business, of like, so this is like this is a huge problem, and you're just adding to the problem by having a pay-per-view, at least in this year. I know he debunks that, even though you have you'll have six pay-per-views in 6 months to end 2023. So I don't know what you want to call that besides 12 a month on average, but it is what it is. And, you know, adding to that with all the TV time, you know, when you get the Collision rundown this week, it's like, man, it's just like the people that were not on the pay-per-view. It's like, here's all their kind of okay matches. It's just like too much content, not enough of, you know, there's a huge roster, but like you said, not enough people that are top tier. And it depends on the week. You know, some weeks it feels like someone like a Swerve is not on TV whatsoever for, you know, months at a time. And then all of a sudden you're here to convince me, someone who's open to this and has advocated for this, that Swerve is essentially a guy who maybe can main event a pay-per-view kind of out of the blue. It's just not a good way to book the situation. It'd be like if WWE was trying to book, you know, Drew McIntyre to main event Survivor Series 2 weeks before it happens. It's just like, I know he's been there. He's a guy that I think is pretty good, but like, you can't just throw him in there and make it a huge thing right away. And that's not an apples to apples comparison, but you know, at least WWE, you know, that consistency in what you're getting, and AEW just feels very scattershot right now on who I'm supposed to care about, who's important, who I should value as a top person. And especially when you have your world champion not have a world title match in consecutive pay-per-views and probably again, going to open the show against two guys that most of the audience has never seen. You know, I cover Ring of Honor for the Torch a long time ago, and the Righteous are very well known to me, but also that's when Ring of Honor was doing literally 900 pay-per-view buys for their pay-per-views. 900, not thousands, 900 people, myself included. So that's kind of what we're talking here. So not to like bury on too much, but there's a lot of things, and I think it's pretty obvious what the issues are. And if you don't want to admit that, that is one thing, but that's the only way you're going to get better if you're AEW, is admitting it and then pivoting.
Well, we've got a lot of people on hold who want to talk, and just a lot of people listening in, more than I anticipated. So I'm kind of curious to see what's on everybody's mind about tonight's show and what Tyler and I have had to say. So let's pause and quickly introduce the show, and then we'll get to calls I haven't even checked the inbox yet. So I got some emails too. So, yeah, this is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, September 27th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and pwtorch.com, and the host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Shows after Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision every Monday, Wednesday, and every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, and also the weekly flagship. Thank you for listening to us today. If you're listening live tonight or downloading the show afterwards, thank you for that. The other voice you hear is Tyler Sage. He's a PWTorch.com contributor. He usually, when he's not out of the country or busy with other things, publishes an alternate perspective report on Dynamite and contributes in other ways. Tyler, great to have you back in the co-host chair. Welcome back to the United States of America.
Yes. You know, I'll say good to be back. I enjoyed myself overseas. But yes, thank you for inviting me back here, Wade. I'm very happy to be here with you.
I'd ask how things went overseas, but we have too many people on hold. So
yeah.
We'll save the vacation time. All right. So we're going to go to our calls here. If you want to get in line on the phone lines, you can call 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call push 1, that flags you on the switchboard so that we know you want to be on the show. Otherwise, you can just call and listen and decide later to push 1. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right. We have so much specifically to talk about. I felt like I touched on a lot of things, kind of macro, some micro things from the show. I definitely will have things to say about various segments and matches in particular as we move along here, but we'll let the callers kind of lead the way for a chunk here. And we will begin with area code 601. 601, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Zach from Jackson, Mississippi.
Zach, good to hear from you. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Well, first-time caller. I've emailed into the fix a few times. But, anyway. First thing, I...
Thank you. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no problem. I thought that Hangman has been kind of mixed received lately. And tonight, like, I had thought that previously, and tonight it kind of felt like that was even more intense tonight. So I was going to see what you guys thought about his reception from the fans tonight.
Yeah, it was an interesting segment. I think there was a lot to like about the segment. There were some things that I'm not sure of. Like this was a big moment for Swerve, and he sort of got seemed to get dry mouth or lose his train of thought, and then he'd remember his line and he'd get excited and say it. Like I didn't think he didn't blow me away, but there were moments where you're like, okay, give this guy more reps, make sure he's taking his job seriously enough to kind of practice and really know what he's going to say. This was a big moment for him on national television, sitting there in the main segment opposite of Hangman. I mean, there was some, I think the takeaway, Tyler, for me mostly is this felt real without being meta enough to take away from the realness. I think there's a lot of times wrestlers go for real, but they forget that this is supposed to be a simulated dramatization of MMA or boxing or, competitive sports. And they talk I think MJF leans too heavily on way too often, the idea of who's cutting good promos, keeping score, who's cutting a better promo. And that can be part of it, but, and we can get into that later, but this did feel like, hey, I want your spot. Swerve's acknowledging him. He's been champion. He's been in main events. Swerve then kind of has a moment of introspection. He's like, yeah, I make new enemies every day, but this is my chance to step up. And then Hangman is so good because he goes from that kind of calm, cool, every man to boom, it's like James Storm, he can hit those high notes and get hyped up, and he did. And I thought the drama, there was a flourish of drama and emotion at the end that made the match feel big. So things to like, things not to like, but getting specifically to Zach's question, which is, did it seem like the crowd had a mixed response for Hangman? We did get the Cowboy Shit chant. They were booing Swerve, taking digs at the poor Denver Broncos. But there's definitely, and part of this is just their crowds are smaller now, but there's definitely a sense that the people attending are like, Hangman, yeah, thanks for admitting that something wasn't quite there for the last year and a half, but why wasn't it? And we've been paying money to see you because, 2 years ago, we loved you. 3 years ago, we loved you. And I didn't really get an answer. You know, he was being a little vague about it. But if the message is I'm back and I'm fired up and I'm going to be, you know, I know they need to lean on me to be a centerpiece act now, then that's good. So like I said, there are things I liked about that, things I didn't. But I definitely noticed, as Zach did, that I don't think people are ready to embrace Hangman because, frankly, I think they're tired of him moping around. I think everybody knows he's a talented guy in his 20s, or maybe 30 now, who's had mega success in AEW, but his gimmick of, oh, it's just sort of being down and depressed all the time, I think people are a little tired of. So, Tyler, what do you think, and what do you think of what Zach and I had to say?
I agree. I think the crowd reflects that, especially with Swerve, too. I think both guys were in a similar position of, you know, kind of like I laid out earlier, of Swerve is like a guy that's kind of been on the periphery of being not a main event guy, but a guy who can be a, you know, top three heel on a Dynamite and work a program, work a TV world title match against a babyface champion. And that's kind of always been there as like a potential, kind of like Ricky Starks as well, but he hasn't gotten the equity of TV time, and he's had a group, but he hasn't had, you know, promo time like we've seen tonight. So the crowd reacting to him in a way that they're like, hey, we like you. We like staying in Swerve's house, but we're not really sure about you. It's kind of the inverse with Paige of just how you laid out, where the crowd wants to cheer for Paige, but, you know, whether it's a conscious or subconscious, it could be a, hey, we see you, you know, we'll see you here, and we're going to see you in this match, and then we might not see you for three more weeks. So from an AEW fan perspective, should I commit to you if I don't think I'm going to see you every week? Or you can take the spin of, like, we know you're kind of not at full quantity here. And as he alluded to, you know, it sounded to me like he's been battling depression, which if he is, I would actually prefer to, like, whatever's up to him, right? It's his health, mental health to talk about. But I think that would endear him more to the audience if he was a little less vague, if he's able to talk about it. So that's more of a Adam Page discussion. But I think the crowd is just wants to like both guys, wants to, you know, give heat to Swerve as a heel. It wants to cheer Page as a babyface. But I think there is a combination of they're not sure AEW is ready to commit to them as talents consistently, and if those guys are ready to be in that spot, more so with Swerve being ready, quote unquote, for the general audience. But yeah, I think the crowd reflected accordingly of not getting into much besides knowing the chants for both guys, the Cowboy Shit and then Swerve's house. So I'm curious to see how they are reacted to post this match and if they're followed up on. But I think the crowd is ready to pop for both of them, but not convinced that they'll see them a ton.
Zach, back to you for any follow-up on any of this.
Yeah, that totally, like, it definitely feels like an intense moment kind of in AEW broadly right now, maybe more so than a lot of things. But at the same time, they're going to Seattle, so I'm wondering if the crowd is going to kind of turn on Hangman completely in Seattle and kind of just lean Swerve hard. Mm-hmm. There, so yeah. That's kind of a thought I've been having for this program. I was gonna go to another thing. I don't know if you'll have anything to say about it, but I don't know how long I have known of Vincent, like, since he was a part of the Kingdom, but I've never been a big fan. I don't know when the Righteous became a thing, but I am very down on the Righteous. That man's voice gets on my nerves so bad. So anyway, I had to throw that out there. And I thought my favorite part tonight was probably Jay White's promo. I just thought he was amazing tonight. Yeah. And that had to be my highlight of the night.
It was fun to see Jay White after all this time. He's so good in the ring. But to really, like, there's just the mannerisms, the rhythm, the charisma that he has does really stand out. And it's one of the big selling points with him. And we've got little glimpses of it with soundbite promos backstage on Collision. But man, if you're Tony Khan and you get Jay White, like, you got to sit down and go, what is it that made him a star? Don't assume everybody has seen his work in Japan. And there's just way too much of that in AEW. That's what they just play to, this small circle of people who know everything about everybody. Tony Khan books for himself and then hopes everybody else is along for the ride. If I'm Tony, I'm like, okay, I know what this guy's great at, and I want to show the world what he's great at, and he should have been having more bandwidth to do that sooner. But it was still, you know, better late than never. And I thought Jay White was really good. I enjoyed, you know, the I'm going to lean back and listen to you, and now lean back and listen to me, and then things are going to get heated. You know, whatever. I mean, there's aspects of that were really good. And I did think Jay White's mic work. And it's not just like if you listen to him and you close your eyes, it's like really good. But it's when you watch him and the way the head bobs and the swagger and the movements, it's just, it stands out. Tyler, throw to you on that. And then I have a follow-up.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think it was a big moment for Jay White. And he could have shrunk big time in that moment because, you know, if you follow or don't follow New Japan, like you're not doing promos like that in that company. If you win the last match of a big show, you get to talk on the mic. And you know, Jay White did that lots of times. He was the you know, IWGP champion. And so he closed lots of shows and cut promos in English for a Japanese audience, but it is so different, to go back and forth as a heel, on live TV with someone like MJF and to have it be, you know, if you just do the quick rundown in your head, and that's what I did of people that have done that with MJF. I mean, obviously CM Punk is up there in their feud and then the dog collar match. But besides that, I mean, I think Jay White is up there. I think he's above the Danielson feuds, you know, speaking segments. He's above, you know, maybe even with Moxley at this time, but he's definitely above what Cole has given, right? If you're just comparing, and this is feels wrong to say because Cole's now injured again, but like as a talent for talent breakdown, I think Jay's as good a talker right now as Adam Cole from what he's getting a response from the crowd, and then work rate is better as well. So if you're Tony Khan, that felt like a pretty natural pivot of like, all right, I don't have Cole for a while, but this Jay White guy can fill a lot of the same things I wanted Adam Cole to give me. So that's a positive. But just to be in that moment the first time that you have to cut a big one-on-one promo with somebody and you hold your own and feel like you should be there, I think it proved a lot of people who maybe were more down on him than they ought to have been, in my opinion. So I think he proved a lot here tonight, and he's only going to get better from here if I had to guess.
Zach, back to you. Do you want to follow up on that or bring up anything else?
Do you think Jay White's the next AEW World Champ or what?
I think he should be. Whether that's soon or later, I don't know. But I think it's so unfair to MJF because he's, you know, he delivers in the ring every time, and you know, he's so talented and good on the microphone, great on the microphone. But for reasons that aren't that the vast majority of things aren't his fault, this isn't a really hot run from AEW except for, you know, Wembley. And, you know, even the boat skit, you know, it's like it's some people are going to love it and others are going to think it's just, you know, DX in the WWE cafeteria, you know, zany. And, you know, Cole's acting of what the earth when all MJF said is, you know, I hope my dad, that schmuck, doesn't find out. It wasn't good acting. It wasn't a natural response. And it almost felt like they were fishing for some new catchphrase or something. So even if you're trying to do that, I would, you know, critique it. And I'm not saying if you enjoyed it, you're like wrong to enjoy it. But for what they're going for, I think you can do a better job. And then you do have the whole issue of like, you know, why is, you know, the diamond ring pulling it on? I'm gonna knock you out and throw you over the boat. Like nobody believes that. So there's just nothing to believe. There's nothing realistic about those skits. They're just thrown out there for entertainment value. And to tell a story, but in a way that, you know, as Todd Martin, you know, passionately and eloquently put it, doesn't feel world title level, main event level, nor is it really the tone that probably is going to be what would differentiate AEW from WWE and seem like an alternative. So all that said, I think it might be good for AEW to have someone fresh on top as a heel champion who hasn't been defined down and can be part, can give people a reason. Sometimes, you know, you change a head coach in a sports team, not because the current head coach isn't going to be successful elsewhere and you're sad to lose them, but you just need a shakeup. You need someone to give a fresh look to talent. And I think maybe you want a world champion on top, as talented as Jay White is, to give AEW fans a reason to go, I liked MJF, but for some reason I lost interest in AEW, but I don't want to miss the Jay White era. And so maybe so. Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, on the broad thing, I do think that he's got a lot of potential to be the next champion, and I think it helps the MJF character, and I agree 100%, especially with Todd's whole point there that you're alluding to, that kind of for this character to work, this has always felt like what MJF would be doing after he lost the world title, and it just happens to be happening while, you know, one half of his run is this story that feels like a post-title run, which is very strange, and that for his character, if he does lose and kind of starts at the bottom and retains being a good guy, I think that proves his character, and he can be an endearing figure and a Moxley-type person for the audience, where you can set up an MJF match at a pay-per-view that doesn't have to be for a title, and it can be important. You can ride him as a staple of the company and have feuds with people and build them and be a gateway for other people to come up with the company. And then, you know, if Jay White is the one to do it, they laid a lot of groundwork for these two to have an epic three-match series over, you know, 3 years to define who is the best of their generation.
Yep.
And if they play those cards right, I think Jay winning the first one and MJF winning the second, and then that third one being a, you know, Rock Austin three with hopefully not the same results at the end of the match, could be something that's really compelling. Could be one of the best long-term stories AEW can play. So I'd like all of that, but I just don't know. And, you know, I think we're all kind of convinced that MJF is signed past 2024, but you can't also, you know, AEW is a little unpredictable on that front. It could be a get the belt off of him, and who knows what's going on, as you allude to with Friends of Cody, in WWE, you know, who knows? So we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. Zach, do you want to see Jay White? Do you think it'd be better for AEW to have not just anyone on top to freshen things up or signal kind of a new beginning, but in particular Jay White?
Well, I guess so. I mean, like, I've been kind of skeptical of the way he was used early on. I mean, and pretty much until very recently, I felt like it has kind of gotten better. And I've kind of grown to like the Bullet Club Gold a little bit more, especially the entrance. I love specifically the Juice and Gun guys. But anyway, yeah, I think he's got to be the one. It feels like everybody else is hurt or just not at that level to me. I don't know.
I think if you have Jay White as a heel champion, you can line up opponents: MJF in a rematch, Hangman Page, Kenny Omega. Give Bryan Danielson a shot in his last year. I think you can groom some people who haven't been at the top, but have charisma, and you could, I think, build them into a pay-per-view main event or like a Max Caster. I'm very high on Colton Gunn. I think that there's a chance for him. I think I would take a chance on him and start elevating him, and he's in Bullet Club Gold. So I think you could, you know, if you plotted out a 9-month storyline, I think going into next summer, you can headline a pay-per-view with Jay White, the reigning champion, against Colton Gunn. And I think AEW should get back in the business of creating their own stars, but they got to pick talented people. Max Caster has certain X factors. He's not like, you know, he's not a world-class athlete worker. He's not going to deliver, you know, the type of matches that Will Ospreay does, or, you know, but that's not his brand, but he's good enough and so good in other ways. And then Colton Gunn is just so good in a timeless old school way. And I know. So I guess to me, I think you can just set a course for something really fresh for AEW with Jay White on top as a heel who has not been defined down and he's fresh. And I just think there's a lot of fresh opponents for him. And it was hardly an exhaustive list of people that intrigue me who could face him. I mean, a babyface Miro against Jay White down the line. Anyway, whatever. I mean, we can do a whole list. To me, I just think AEW needs to feel fresher, but don't put somebody on top who it's iffy if they can deliver. And I just think Jay White absolutely is as qualified as anybody delivering. He's 30 years old. MJF's 27. It's not like, you know, you're trying to get something out of somebody who's in his late 30s or 40s before he retires. There's not so much mileage on him that you're like, well, it's now or never. But at the same time, he's fresh and as far as I know, healthy. And he can fill TV time on the mic in a way that I think just compares nicely to whatever WWE is doing. And again, none of this is anti-MJF, but it just feels like symbolically they might want to change at the top just to send a signal to fans who have tuned out or aren't buying tickets. This is the guy. This is the star you're paying to see. Zach, anything else?
Well, I going back a ways, I would be way more into MJF right now if his babyface turn would not have been involved with this just whatever, just the shenanigans of him and Adam Cole. Yeah. Like, I was I was hopeful about it, like, back in the day before it ever happened, but as it progressed, I still feel like he's going to be a bad guy at the end. I don't know what to think about this. I mean, he's still calling us the poors. I mean, I don't know. Like, thanks, man. I love you.
I get a kick out of that aspect, but
mm-hmm. I love it. I know. I personally do love it. I love being called the poors. Was it Stokely Hathaway at the end of the show? What was the deal with the beatdown? That's pretty much all I got for you guys.
Cool. Thanks. I appreciate it. So I started the show about four minutes late. And so I just watched on DVR, and my DVR cut off right as the beatdown was happening. So I don't even know what did happen, Tyler, at the end of the beatdown.
Yeah, there were four people in all black outfits, and they zoomed in on someone with the MJF mask when he had the devil mask. But it was someone very, very skinny and very short. So I think Stokely is a good candidate for that. So I don't know what's happening there. It feels like to give Jay something to do, maybe in the intermediate, maybe just something on Saturday until you get to, you know, you would assume that MJF and Jay White is going to be your full gear main event. So you got to give Jay something to do because you're only allowed to book 2 weeks before that pay-per-view if you're AEW. So you got to give everybody something to do before 2 weeks ahead of time. So that's what it feels like to me, is some sort of weird, you know, maybe they'll team up and just superimpose the Adam Cole storyline with Jay White and MJF now to team up against Stokely and Big Bill and some other people, which that sounds horrible. So I hope that's not the case.
So Jay White was the one getting beat down.
Yes, Jay White, by people in all black, and one had the MJF mask, but it's definitely not MJF.
So Jay White, is Jay White a heel?
I don't know. I think so.
So Jay White's opposite your number one babyface, MJF, ostensibly and probably, but not for sure. And you do an angle at the end of the show where Jay White's getting beat down by a gang of people who are going to reveal that they were pretending to be MJF, probably pretending to be MJF. But now we have sympathy for Jay White? All right. I'll see what they do.
Yeah, I mean, I was almost like, man, I wish that wasn't on there. I feel like we're going to talk about this for like a half hour now. And I was like ready to talk about like everything. The build and all that stuff. And I was like, oh, great.
Fortunately, I didn't see like the last 15 seconds. So, and they got to stop doing that, by the way. I don't know. I mean, just like end the show on time. Like, stop.
Yeah.
I need to plan better, you know, and you know, record what's on right afterwards and be ready to switch over. And I just wasn't as I scrambled to do the live show here. But, yeah, anyway. Okay, so thank you, Zach, for the call. Our number is 347-215-8558. Push 1 when you call if you want to be on the show. It's great hearing for first-time callers and either recent listeners or long-time listeners. So, Zach, thanks for setting the tone on that. Let's go next to area code 262. 262, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Frankie. I'm in Milwaukee.
I missed your first name.
Frankie. I'm in Milwaukee.
Good. Spell your name.
Can you hear me okay?
It sounds like I can hear you okay, but it sounds like you're calling yourself Cranky or Frankie.
Frankie.
It is Frankie.
A-N-K-I-E.
Okay. Gotcha. I was like, I think he's Frankie, but it sounded like Frankie. So.
Well, no, my nickname is Nerdy. You can call me that, too.
Okay, I got Frankie down.
Actually, what you guys were just talking about is the reason why I was calling, because I was just sitting here like, I was watching it, and at the very end, I was just like, oh, God, does this not seem like a poor man's like retribution, like type invasion thing, because that's what it kind of seemed like. If anybody remembers when Retribution invaded in WWE during the pandemic stuff, that was absolutely horrible. But that's what it kind of seemed like to me, because you got MJF as the babyface, and then you got, you know, top heel, and you're attacking the top heel. Why? That didn't make any sense to me. It just didn't click.
I do not understand. But it almost feels like there has to be some explanation for it that will excuse it from the criticism that I'm tempted to give it.
It's just like when you have a cliffhanger like that, like whenever there's a cliffhanger like that, I go back to like Supernatural season 3 when Dean's in hell and we're sitting there like, ah, we got to wait 6 months to find out what's going to happen next. You know what I mean? It's just like, dude, you got to wait another week to see what's going to happen. Like, that's a horrible cliffhanger. Like, that was just horrible. And not to mention, like you were saying, it's like too short to be MJF. So who are these guys? Like, are you trying to do, like, another kind of faction? Like, what is this? Or is MJF actually going heel now?
And what does it have to do with the pay-per-view? And what does it have to do with promoting the pay-per-view?
To be like go-home show.
Yeah. Yep.
It didn't make sense.
Mentioned.
It didn't click.
Yeah.
But I wanted to give you guys thoughts on what you like, who you thought might be behind the mask, what you thought, you know, like, are they trying to do another faction? Like, no offense, man. Like, AEW has so many factions. It's like there's like 87 factions over there.
I remember
you used to have like two or three factions in wrestling. Now, like, everybody has a faction.
I don't think there should be a hard and fast rule of how many factions there are, but I think the number of factions you have should match the number of factions that you can effectively get over to your audience and define well and put them in a useful role. Tyler, jump in. What, any other thoughts beyond what you've already said about what might be going on with this? I'm still trying to wrap my head around why you put Jay White out there opposite of MJF and tell the story of MJF ostensibly a babyface, so Jay White's a heel, and then you have him getting beat down at the end. I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can think of that's not a horrible idea, because I'm trying to run down like some scenarios, and none of them are good, so I'm just going to leave them there. But maybe it's someone trying to frame MJF to make him look like the heel that they think he is, or trying to portray him in that way. But then you still give sympathy to Jay White because he's the victim of a crime to make MJF look bad, and MJF and Jay White should have a feud. Not they both are against some other force that is going to overshadow the potential feud that they're going to have. So I think either way, hopefully it's just something that we see on Collision and it leads to that. And there's maybe that's the reason why maybe Jay White is not, because he doesn't have a match at Wrestle Dream. So maybe that's the reason why he would not attack MJF and screw him over in his match that he's written off the show. It's something like that. But, you know, there's lots of – go ahead.
So what about this? What about the attackers are Taven and Bennett and Roderick and maybe or maybe not Adam Cole? If you believe Adam Cole was going to turn heel. And by the way, I mean, I guess we're keeping open the – was legit injured, but – didn't blow up his ankle, like he said, requiring surgery, because he was moving around gingerly, but not like someone who tore ligaments and broke bones.
It didn't seem like he could have done that kind of an injury with what, you know, the accident that happened.
Yeah.
He's kind of severe. But...
And maybe that's why when I asked people, you know, what happened, they said, we'll address it Wednesday. They didn't want to lie because they're actually going to exaggerate it for storyline purposes. And so maybe Tyler, Cole tweaked his ankle, but it's fine. But and maybe he didn't even tweak his ankle. I mean, like, we can even rewind and go, maybe that was all a work, because they had this master plan in mind that he's going to, although he shouldn't have walked around on it for 2 minutes afterwards if he was going to claim he shattered it. Okay. So I want to go down this road as a possibility though. And I know people are speculating on it. If Cole is claiming he needs surgery to lull MJF into a false sense of security, and it's the escape hatch of having to lose the ROH tag team titles to anybody in a 2-on-2 match, it would make sense storyline-wise to have MJF lose in a 2-on-1 match because Adam Cole comes to ringside to help or provide moral support, but ends up overtly turning or accidentally, oopsie, costing MJF the match. So now you have MJF losing the tag titles on behalf of him and Cole in a two-on-one situation where Cole interferes, either obviously on purpose or claiming it's an accident. And that forwards a storyline where then Cole actually perhaps tears off the boot because he only needed 2 weeks to recover or a couple days to ice it. And we actually just do have the full-fledged Cole, Bennett, Taven, Roderick faction. And Cole's going to do a promo about how clingy MJF got and how pathetic he was that he never had a friend. And, you know, at one point, Cole was really going to be his friend, but, man, he just was so clingy and it was pathetic. And his real friends are these guys. And they're the ones who beat down Jay White, not because they want to put sympathy on Jay White, but because he's the one who would make it most suspicious that it was MJF. So it's less about Jay White, which is bad, but a necessary evil to tell the story that they tried to frame MJF when it was actually Cole with and the guy had the long phone call with Roderick and Taven and Bennett. So Tyler, your thoughts on that scenario?
Yeah, I mean, you could also write off Jay White for a minute to make sure that, you know, he just called out MJF and wants to be the champion. And if he's off TV for a little bit and Adam Cole is going to take on MJF, then doesn't make that claim feel weaker if Jay White is doing something else on the side. And he's like, oh, well, I'll just patiently wait my turn as the badass heel that I'm portraying myself as. Doesn't make a lot of sense. So, I mean, I guess.
Like I said earlier in the show, people I asked for an update wouldn't give it to me, which means it's bad news, but we don't want news to get out and you'll can't help but report it if we tell you. And we're going to turn it into a very newsworthy segment. It'll be sad. Or we don't want to lie to you, Wade. And we're going to claim it's a serious injury, but I don't want to lie and tell you he's not injured or it's minor if he comes out and then says, oh, I need surgery. So, again, I'm just, you know, trying to connect dots. And, hey, there's actually more than one way to interpret the fact that they were really quiet about it the past week. And so I think that all fits better than anything else because you have to come up with a reason that they would have. And, again, I would have been more prepared if they didn't run a minute, you know, 20 seconds long and I didn't see it with my thoughts. But the fact that there was an MJF mask and they're trying to obviously frame MJF because MJF wouldn't hide behind a mask. And he's not that it's not believable. MJF be like, that Jay White, I'm going to attack him with a group. Like, it just doesn't – but you can imagine a group deciding we're going to try to frame MJF. Well, what group makes any sense? As Frank is like, you know, well, who could it be? It doesn't. I can't imagine it would be. Well, the only group that makes sense is the one he's in a storyline with, which is the four I mentioned, or the three I mentioned, plus Cole. And if we've come to the conclusion Cole is going to most likely be the heel, and I think that's been my thought for a while now, this does set that up, and then you're actually on course for the MJF Cole match. Like you said, Jay White gets a moment in the spotlight. You plant the seed of him being a guy to take on MJF, and I don't think this turns a babyface that he got beat up, although if it turns out that it's this heel group, he's going to want revenge, and maybe that is Jay White turning babyface. But now you take away the MJF Jay White heel face matchup if that's the direction you're going. But that does seem like that's a possibility too. So the more I talk about it, the more that does kind of seem like the likely scenario that Cole isn't as hurt as he said, and he's going to turn on MJF, and they're trying to frame him, and that's going to play out on Sunday. And that's also their escape hatch from Cole and MJF having to lose to a tag team that isn't nearly at their level in order to get rid of those belts. And you get set up for, you know, for the match people have been anticipating. And this all fits that, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, you're laying it out, and I can't argue it. And especially when you look at the boot that and the crazy wrapping that was on Adam Cole's foot, it felt off watching it live of like, man, that seems like comical. The wrap on that foot. And also, yeah, like, if you would have heard it last Wednesday, right? When that injury happened.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, like, you would have gotten surgery by now if you knew you had
that
surgery.
That's the thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
You would have gotten it Friday or Monday, and you wouldn't have been on the show, and it would have been a thing. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. And the four people in the kingdom, the person they zoomed in on could have been Stokely Hathaway, could totally have been Adam Cole. They're both short
that's the
and
thing.
Skinny.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
I know. He is skinny enough.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that's potentially the thing, and it makes sense, and I feel dumb as a fan for not catching that pretty immediately. So thank you for getting me in that spot there, Wade. But as you're describing it, I was kind of like, man, I hate that. And I hate that they lied to me, but it's also really good heat for Cole to like play that card, do that thing that we've seen so many times where he's like, I'll be back real soon, guys. And MJF doing the thing to be the hero. You know, the only thing that stinks for me is like, it's probably going to be the first match of the show and this is all going to happen. And then you're going to have like a bunch of other matches that have to like live after that huge moment. And you're not going to get any correlate. You know, I'd love to see that resolved in the main event. Maybe they will. There's only 10 matches on the card. See, you know, AEW loves an 11 match card. so maybe you have Cole and MJF have something, because you can't really hold that till full gear, I don't think. Yeah. That's really the issue. So I'd hate for this to be a episode of Dynamite thing, but hey, you can pop a rating, which is good. But yeah, I certainly think you're right. And so, you know, send your thank yous or hate messages to Wade for kind of burning this awesome swerve that was coming your way if you didn't catch it immediately. So.
Well, and I think there's also this thing of, oh, everyone's going to say everything is a work. And so there's like the pushback, you know, everyone wants to be the smart person who says, ah, everything's a work. And sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But sometimes it is. and all the pieces fall into place here. Now, that said, sometimes an ankle can be injured enough where, oh, we're going to do surgery after the swelling goes down. I'm not an expert on when ankles that need surgery are worked on. But, I they just go right in to fix knee ligament damage. But I don't know with an ankle if it really is badly broken or injured if they need to wait for swelling to go down or something. So I throw that out there. But, yeah, this just does seem – and, again, I just didn't see the MJF mask or that Jay White was the victim, unfortunately, before going on. And it took some kind of talking through it and realizing it makes no sense for Jay White to get beat down unless he's just a player in it for a larger purpose. So anyway, Frankie, I'll bring you back on here. Any follow-up on that? Any thoughts on our theory here?
No, it makes sense. It just, like I said, my only thought was I hope they're not trying to pull off, like I said, like some kind of retribution type thing.
Yeah, I don't think they are. I mean, it depends on what you define as that, but this just seems to fit the storyline.
But if it's with this, you know, with that fitting it, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah. But
I just don't know why they would end the show with something that doesn't relate directly.
I'm a first-time caller, kind of a new listener. My buddy Kevin told me to come on, so Kevin in Colorado, he's like one of my best friends. Hi, Kevin.
I'm glad he spread the word and encourage you to not just listen but also call. I appreciate it, and hopefully we'll hear again from you soon.
All right, man. You all have a great night.
Yeah, you too. Word of mouth, people, social media, tell people about our show. If you like our approach to covering this, what we do, we're different than I think a lot of shows out there. We're not doing the clickbait headlines and the manufactured bombast and we're not fanboys, you know, just like obsessing about our favorites and not looking at the business reason things are done. And if that's why you're listening, you know, spread the word on Reddit and directly to your friends and stuff like that. Let them know. We like more listeners and we like more callers and we like expanding the conversation with different points of view and fans with different perspectives. Our number, speaking of which, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Let's go next to James in Clemson and then Hendrick in Portland is on deck. James, thanks for holding. What's on your mind tonight about Dynamite?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Tyler. I'm glad you guys are saying what you're saying because I honestly thought I was just so upset from Saturday after Clemson lost to Florida State in overtime. So I'm glad to hear I'm not the only one who thought this was just a weird show. last week we talked about how AEW booked their pay-per-views back-to-back and it kind of created like a new habit for people of maybe possibly thinking about pay-per-views. And so I'm watching this show tonight and I'm just thinking to myself the whole time, like, why should I spend $50 on this show? And I'm texting my friend about it and we're like talking about matches and stuff. And he goes, oh yeah, isn't Danielson and Zack Sabre Jr. supposed to happen? And I'm just like, wow, I cannot believe, like, I've made it through almost this entire show and still no mention of Danielson in a match. With that said, yeah. Like, I've really thought a lot about it, and I don't think I'm going to purchase this pay-per-view because, like, besides that match, I really can't think of anything that makes it worth my money right now. And so, yeah, I just wanted to kind of throw to you guys, like, do what Tony Khan should do. Like, why should I spend $50 on this show, you know?
Well, it's going to – I mean, it's not my job to talk you into or out of how you spend your money at all, and it would be, you know, kind of journalistically wrong for me to be rooting for you to spend $50 on the show or root against it. However, I mean, it's going to be a good show on paper. You know, I mean, MJF against the Righteous, 2-on-1, I think probably is going to have a major chapter in the storyline. Like earlier, I was like, oh, we're not going to find out till Cole's back, and even then it might be augmented. I think we're going to see a pretty cool, well-executed swerve that's going to land MJF as a solid babyface and Adam Cole. I mean, people are going to tune in to see Adam Cole tear into MJF as this, you know, pathetic, needy friend, and he's going to be so mean about it. And playing off of Roderick, who's just been a breakout star, and I did not expect to be saying that in this. And Taven and Bennett get to, you know, frankly introduce themselves to a true national audience. There's real potential there. So you'll be there for history. You also have Jericho, Omega, and Ibushi against Takeshita, Guevara, and Will Ospreay. There's a lot of good talent in that match. Even if Ibushi's a step slow and Jericho's a step slow from their peak and Kenny's beat down from being sick or injured, I don't think he's injured, but still, I mean, Takeshita and Guevara are going to be able to, and Ospreay, excuse me, are going to be just creating so much movement. And that's just, you know, it is a bit of a dream six-man tag, not to, you know, use the buzzword of the name of the pay-per-view, but that is a dream all-star three-on-three match. Christian Darby, don't feel like a dream match, it feels like a really good grudge match for a title. I really liked, and we haven't gotten to it yet, the Christian and Darby Allin interaction during that sit-down interview. Christian is a master right now, and I just love that he doesn't need to yell. I love how he brought up Nick Wayne's mom. He said, oh, wait, you don't need to. Darby, don't invite her. I'll do it myself. I'll hit her up on the DM and or, you know, slip into her DM, whatever. And then Buddy, oh, I'm sorry. He's dead. And then his uncle. I mean, like, what a just I mean, I know Don Callis wants to be the ultimate dirtbag scumbag, but Christian is lapping him. And so that's going to be a good match. It's not, you know, Christian is not the athlete he once was, and he's never been, you know, a Will Ospreay level or Kenny Omega athlete, but that's just going to be a great match in terms of storyline, personalities, and, you know, Christian being sneaky and Darby taking tons of bumps. Kingston Shibata, I mean, people love Kingston, and it's got the ROH world title at stake. I think that, you know, I don't think it was made like match of the night, but it has a chance to be a positive on the show. Statlander Julia, I think they get credit for building up Julia Hart. You know, I mean, her wins I don't think have been super impressive, but the fact that they bothered to give her this, like, kind of quiet winning streak, and now they're really highlighting that the last person to beat her is Statlander. What was it, a year and a half ago? That's good. The four-way tag for the AEW World Titles has tons of talent there, with the Young Bucks and the Guns and Lucha Brothers and Cassidy and Hook. Starks and Yuta they added, and that should be a really good match. And I didn't even talk about Daniels and Zack Sabre Jr., which is likely the headliner, and Hangman and Strickland, which closed out the show, and FTR and Aussie Open. Aussie Open are great. So if you don't order the show, I think the odds are it's going to be a really good 4 hours of wrestling. So be prepared to accept that you skipped a really good 4 hour pro wrestling show. Cause I think Tony Khan, his focus does seem to be hangs his hat on, to use a cliche, the quality of his pay-per-views. And he leans on that. And I think this is a hell of a lineup. Tyler, how about you?
Yeah, I can agree more. I think the lineup is great. I think you laid it out well there. Also one thing to consider, and you might have, you know, let me know if I'm down the wrong path here, Wade, but, you know, the reporting on Adam Copeland is his contract is over at the end of September, and it's October 1st of the show. Christian's in a big 2 out of 3 falls match. Could have a big premiere there. Do I think that works long-term as a group? Probably not, but it'd be a huge moment to have him come in and screw over Darby or screw over Christian, right?
Exactly.
So that is super interesting if that can happen. I think that feels like a big moment that AEW can capitalize, plus the Adam Cole thing that you have convinced me on the fly here. That is totally what's happening. So I think those big moments alone, and, you know, I think even if, let's say you didn't love, like I was more on the not loving the Swerve Hangman promo. I think both those guys have proved it time and time again in the ring to put on some really good work. And I think that could be a big match. And I don't know who's going to win too. There's a lot of matches on the show that, you know, you don't know who's going to win with 100% certainty, which I think a lot of AEW shows suffer from.
Mm-hmm.
Where
yep.
they're really good, but you know, like, you know, 99% this person's going to win and this title change is going to happen. It's going to be fun, but it doesn't feel as impactful. And there's lots of things on the show that, you know, even with the MJF stuff we laid out here, we think this might happen, but it might not either. You know, it's not bloodline, but bloodline adjacent of there's like some obvious things that can happen. And also one thing to remember with that too, as the first caller mentioned, that Vincent, not so much Dutch, but Vincent in The Righteous was a member of the Kingdom. He's very tight with Matt Taven in real life and in character. So them working together to give Vincent and his guy the tag titles, also while screwing over MJF, makes a lot of sense storyline-wise. And it makes sense why this group came out of literally nowhere if you're an AEW viewer. And this is probably the first time you've seen them in the last 2 weeks to get put in the spot and win these titles. So it all makes sense, and I think it would be pretty newsworthy and should be a completely well-worked match. I don't see any match on the card that I'm like, that's going to be a little bit of a dud. It should be great.
All right, James, did we just put $50 in Tony Khan's pocket?
I think you guys swapped me to a solid maybe, depending on what I'm doing.
fair enough. But, I mean, not everybody – there's so many good matches, and I'll talk you out of it. There's so many good matches in wrestling. There's no shortage of it, and you can watch a lot of them free. They're on cable and on YouTube, for that matter. And from a storyline standpoint, unless you really want to be there for perhaps Adam Copeland showing up, or be there for what could be a big angle with Adam Cole – you know, with all the respect to everything else that, Tyler, you said, I don't think there's going to be major storyline twists beyond that. You know, I mean, there's going to be a new number one contender for the AEW Tag Team titles. Ricky Starks and Wheeler, there's not going to be a turn there. You know, FTR are going to win or they're not going to win. They're probably going to win. You know, on and on. I mean, Zack Sabre and Danielson, there's no storyline. It's just a dream match. So, you know, you can live without it if you watch wrestling mostly because you want to be eyewitness to live history being made, with the exception of perhaps Adam Copeland and a big, big chapter in the Cole MJF series.
And if Tony Khan is saying that this is a, what do you say, a new chapter of AEW starts, you know, I would say that platitudes and Tony Khan don't mix well in my history covering AEW. But, you know, maybe there's some big announcement, too, on the show that you can see live.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
But, you know,
everyone who hasn't followed that, you'll get a chance to hear him like talk mm-hmm. circles around that question and follow-up question. Did you buy New Japan? And he's like, I'd like to know who originally reported that. And is that because you want to give them credit or laugh at them? We have a story up on pwtorch.com on what he said and how he didn't really answer it. I give him credit. He was honest. He's like, I don't want to tell you because I want you to tune in Sunday. Mm-hmm. So keep the rumor going, but I'm going to douse it a little, but am I dousing it because I want it to be more of a surprise, or am I dousing it because I want to be sort of honest and point back at this and go, I tried to tell you. So a lot of things at play, but a new era can also mean, as Rich Fan and I joked about, a new championship belt
new tournament
or Adam Copeland showing up and becoming the new authority figure. You know, the one, you know, he's not going to wrestle full time or even at all until there's an angle that pulls him out of retirement. But the new era for AEW is Adam Copeland is our general manager. And we're going to do the GM bit with a baby face who's going to match make and take Tony Khan. I'm just spitballing and being random here, but a new era can mean a lot of things and we shouldn't assume. What was Adam Cole's faction in NXT called?
Undisputed Era.
No, the Undisputed Era. So
yeah.
I'm wondering if the angle with Adam Cole turning heel and tearing off that boot and saying MJF is a pathetic sap is to rechristen Taven, Bennett, Roddy and him as a new faction with the name Era as part of it. So I throw that out there too. James, back to you.
Yeah, so some of the matches you guys did mention, I honestly didn't even know were happening on this show. So I think that is a bit of a problem. To me, like my favorite, my favorite years in wrestling was like when you had the NXT takeovers, and it was just six matches that really mattered. Versus like now we get 11 matches that are going to be really good matches. And I just much prefer that formula of just matches that matter. But I did want to bring up like something that we haven't talked about yet. The first match, what did Jeff Jarrett do to deserve a title match? And he comes out there and says his record is 3-2. And like, I guess to me, I don't think anybody really had a problem with the ranking system when it first started. We had a problem with the way it was executed. It didn't make sense that the Dark Order was ranked number one and the Young Bucks were ranked number six. Like, it was just stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I just wish there was, like, more of a way to, like, say, you actually earned this match versus we just decided to throw Jeff Jarrett in here this week and here's your opening contest for no reason just to have a title match. Like, even if, like, say, last week Jeff Jarrett beats somebody of significance, like, and then they say, well, now that he beat whoever, we're going to have this title match this week. So just any comments on the first match and Jeff Jarrett's title opportunity?
Yes, it did. It did get the show off to a weird start. that was Ray Phoenix's first defense. It felt very out of nowhere. I mean, it was a Jeff Jarrett special. You know, that wasn't weird. You know, the bunch of people in the ring apron, distractions, a strut, a referee spot with Karen. Everybody got their moment in the spotlight. And I'm being neutral about it. I'm not endorsing it or riffing on it. It just is what it is with Jarrett. He does what he does well. But that was weird, but I don't think I don't think Jarrett had a 22-0 or 24-0 18-month win streak to justify this. And then it's weird that they have a match, you know, that they're setting up matches or having a match where it's like, okay, the winner of this gets a international title shot. It's like, well, why do they have to fight for it? And Jarrett didn't. Tyler?
Yeah, I know this is sold as an open challenge earlier in the day when I was trying to kind of see what the show is going to be like for setting up my report. And then Jarrett was announced, I think, like 45 minutes before the show started. So to me, that's, not everyone's got full access to Tony Khan's office, but Jeff Jarrett certainly does from his office work that he does, booking venues and whatnot. So maybe he knocked on the door. It's like, hey, boss, I can fill that spot tonight. You know, that's a bad Jeff Jarrett impression. I apologize for that. But that's what it seems like to me of, like, you know, Tony Khan working that 81st hour this week and Jeff Jarrett coming in and being like, hey, boss, I'll take it off your plate and I'll get in there and get the TV time is my guess, but that's just me being a little facetious as well. So,
yeah. James, what else for
you? I know Todd Martin kind of vented on the open challenges in AEW, I'm 100% with him. I'm so over the open challenges. And, like, it's not even, like when Cena was doing the open challenge, it mattered. It was cool. But, like, these are just, like, bring out your next jobber week after week, and you're just going to lose. And it defines down people, all the things that Todd said. And then, so as far as with MJF coming out, I could not get Todd Martin out of my head. I'm a big... I personally like the MJF stuff, but I'm just sitting there thinking, like, if I'm a new fan who just cut AEW on for the first time tonight, what do I think of this? And I don't think I'm watching next week. Like, he just doesn't take himself, like, it just doesn't feel like it matters enough. And part of me, like, could not help but think, watching him and Jay White there, that whole segment would have been a lot better if the roles were reversed with MJF as the heel and Jay White as the face. I honestly thought maybe it would like have come across a lot better storyline wise. So that's just my opinion on that. But I really will just go ahead and take it off the air. I don't have really anything else to bring up. Just kind of wanted to talk about those things.
Thanks, James. Yeah, good point. So, Tyler, I should bring this up. I don't think it's a case because I don't think they would, quote, give it away if it were the case. But maybe Jay White is going to be the babyface and MJF is going to turn heel. And the audible is Adam Cole's going to miss some time or not. But almost he has to, given that he sold it. It's such a big injury. He can't say that and come back anytime soon. And MJF is going to actually join Roderick and Taven and Bennett. They beat down Jay White. It's sort of a double turn in a way. And, I mean, I'm trying to make a straight-faced pitch for this as an option, so it doesn't seem like a spoiler with the other scenario. But maybe it is what they presented it as, which is MJF was the person beating down Jay White. He was offended at what Jay White said, but the other thugs are his new faction, and they had to call an audible because Cole's injured. And so MJF is actually going to end up, betraying Cole and befriending Cole's old friends. Do you buy that at all as a possibility, especially just kind of based on, the pitch that maybe Jade's better as a heel and MJF as a – or excuse me, Jade's better as a face and MJF as a heel.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate you giving the college try there, but no, I did not buy it. But, you know, mainly because I think it'd be such a bad idea to frame Jay White as a babyface because he's been defined so – I don't know, not poorly, but, you know, he's been defined pretty solidly as a heel here, and I don't think he has not endeared himself to the crowd as a whole – to make that babyface change happen and mean anything. And he's just in the same lane as other people. And he's been really protected in matches and really throughout his run, even though he hasn't been featured super prominently, he's been very, very protected. If you look at every single thing he's been involved in, he's not, you know, fallen to anybody. So I just don't think that would work for his character. If you think he's going to be a big deal, there's no reason to turn him in this way. And especially when he has done all his best work as a heel, to have him come into the company as a heel and then transition later, I think is the way to go. And then also with MJF, you know, he's been a heel basically his entire career. I think he's got, not to quote him, but mid-instincts from time to time. He does not have John Moxley, let's say, instincts of being able to kind of do the right thing in almost every scenario just because he's been around the block. And I think him as a babyface, he's kind of early heel MJF where he's kind of relying on the same sort of stuff, the same shtick, and hasn't expanded beyond that like he did later, like the CM Punk run and, you know, that sort of stage of his heel run where he felt truly like a number one heel. I think he's kind of getting that on the fly, and I think he will get there as a babyface, but I think we're in just an odd transition phase with him relying on the same sort of stuff week in and week out, not taking himself seriously, using the, you know, sophomoric humor as a crutch more so than defining a character. So,
yeah. All right. Well, James, I gave it a shot. I'm not ruling it out because I wouldn't rule out that they had to call sort of an audible that has problems, but we need to shake things up. And if Cole's going to be out a long time and MJF just thinks I want to be a heel and I don't know, but yeah, I mean, I can't even talk myself into it. I trust. All right, I wanted to at least fully consider the possibility. And it's possible they're just doing something dumb that doesn't make sense. We can make our case against, but they're just doing it anyway. All right, 347-215-8558. Give us a call. Push 1 if you want to be part of the show. We've got a few more callers to get to. So, got 3 more on hold. So get in line if you'd like to, and some emails to get to. I thought it was going to be a shorter show, Tyler, and look at us. and look at the callers. All right, Hendrick in Portland, I promise you're up next. Keith in Virginia, you're on deck. Hendrick, what's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, Wade and Tyler, nice to talk to you. So I'm actually excited for WrestleDream. I'm actually going to WrestleDream, but I'm not excited or going because of this Dynamite whatsoever. I find it so super crazy hard to believe of how little it was hyped whatsoever, but it is what it is.
I don't think Tony Khan realizes it. I just think he's overworked and didn't step back. But, man, if you're like, what are the selling points of this pay-per-view, and we need to, hit two things hard, one other thing, a distant third, and then, let people know the rest of the show is going to be great and there's something to it. I mean, that's kind of the approach you ought to take, unless you have, a six-match show and you can just kind of give every match, a ton of – or not a ton, but a good amount of attention. But when you have this many matches, you got to do the Wheeler Yuta Ricky Starks thing and the lip service to the four-way tag. That's fine. But you got to pick out two matches that are clearly the reason that you believe people should do this. And if the idea is, the two-on-one match is going to be a big angle and Christian Darby's going to have Adam Copeland show up, and I don't know that that's the case. It's logical speculation. And I don't want to know ahead of time if it's happening. If I'm a Hollywood writer, I don't want to find the script to the finale of some great series before I just watch it. You can send me a screener if it's pre-taped, but I don't want to read the script before I see it play out. And that's kind of how I feel about big surprises, but, teach their own. Hendrick, they did not decide what two matches are the reason you should spend $50 on Sunday. In fact, they largely ignored, one of the major reasons that a lot of people who are high on this lineup are ordering it. I don't know if they just threw in the towel and said there's nothing to say, or they just wanted to give Danielson the night off, or what. But, yeah, Hendrick, back to you. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, even the match I was kind of the most pumped for was Eddie Kingston versus Shibata, and there was barely any mention of that. And I think they're going to do something on Ramp. Eddie Kingston's going to talk on Rampage, I think. But
yeah,
I mean, after his huge win in New York, I thought there'd be a little follow up. I don't know.
That's a problem with not having a hard roster split, and it doesn't seem like they're going to do that. Is when you don't have you've got Jay White and Ricky Starks, who have been sort of collision guys showing up on Dynamite. It does make it seem like, well, why did we not hear from Eddie or Danielson? And in Tony's mind, because Tony books for Tony, and that can lead to really good pay-per-views, but it can also lead to very few people seeing the hype for several of your matches. So in his mind, he's thinking, Rampage, we're going to cover it there. Hendrick, we're going to cover that on Rampage. Tune in. Well, right, but half the audience or a third of the audience is going to tune in. And so you haven't really checked that box. Not everybody has all the time to watch all 5 hours between now and Sunday night. And he's like, oh, yeah, and we're going to have that Zack Sabre promo on Collision on Saturday night. It's going to be a hard sell at the end. Well, right, but that's a much smaller audience, and you potentially are losing tens of thousands of buys for the people who aren't watching Collision. And that's the tough choice when you're in. Plus, after Rampage, they're having, a one-hour preview of WrestleDream, where they're going to do a great job probably promoting this show and getting you excited about it. But the peeling off of viewers is going to be tremendous by that point. And you kind of have to pick your flagship show or do a hard roster split. You got to do one or the other. Because you either need to make people know if you want to see Bryan Danielson, you have to tune in Saturdays, like with Punk. And if you're not going to do that, then you got to have Danielson and Zack Sabre talk on Dynamite and have some sort of follow-up and have the big 2-3 matches are talked about on both of the A shows for Wednesday and Saturday. And then the undercard matches, you can kind of focus on different ones on Wednesday and Saturday, but you can't not, and maybe Eddie Kingston exception, but you should do something, going in and out of the commercial break. And, I just don't know that you need Jeff Jarrett getting a title shot. Although they had so many video packages and promos, it's hard to imagine them not having a match of that length and having an Eddie Kingston promo instead. So, some tough calls were made. Tyler, anything you want to add to that?
Not especially. I mean, I think we're pretty in step there. I think the roster split would help tremendously, or like you said, just have it be there's so many things that we know as people that watch AEW on a regular basis of these are kind of the rules of AEW, right? There's rules in WWE of how things are presented.
Yeah.
I think just even that split of hey, I know when I get a pay-per-view set up, even subconsciously that I'm going to get, these are the two big matches. I'm going to get stuff all the time. And then, yeah, it's split 50-50 on getting hype for the other ones to make both shows, Dynamite and Collision, feel like I must watch them as a regular viewer. But that's not happening at this moment, obviously.
Hendrick, back to you.
Maybe they're going to hype up the Danielson-Sabre match on Collision because They really haven't announced much of anything for that, because I'm going to be going to that show, too. That's in Seattle the night before WrestleDream. And all right now they have is Juice versus Andrade and Best Friends versus The Kingdom announced for that. And that is the most missable show that there could ever be. So, I mean, hopefully Danielson's going to be there live, like, hyping it up. I mean, probably Xavier will be there. Maybe he'll be there by then. I'm not entirely sure, but I don't know. So talk about a bad lead in. I mean, to WrestleDream, how about Collision? Good grief. But, and then go ahead.
Oh, if it works out, give us a call Saturday night after you attend, if you have time.
I did. I sent you an email, but it was during Dynamite. So you're doing like 100 things at once. So, yeah. But
okay,
I will.
Cool.
I will do my best to check in, because who knows what's going to be happening then. But I did double check to make sure what Tony Khan said is that little thing, like his promo for WrestleDream, where he did the voiceover, I think, for, you know, he doesn't do that too often, if ever. But he did say this will be the start of a new era. And so... My first thought was, and with Jay White being, you know, so much a part of this show, but not involved on that show, I figured he had to be involved. But then you were talking about, oh, hey, how about, you know, the Undisputed era. And one other wrinkle in the Undisputed era of a guy who hasn't been talked about in a while, who's still under contract, is Kyle O'Reilly. Maybe he could even show up that night.
The problem with the new start of a new era being a pitch for the show that Tony Khan is making is he'd have to be aware of the plot. If it turns out Cole, Benetaven, and Roddy, and perhaps Kyle O'Reilly reveal themselves to be part of a new era, a new faction with era as part of the name. I mean, you can't. I mean, that I would hope that they would see that would look really bad, that Tony Khan is hyping something that MJF doesn't know about and is a top secret among a heel faction. So I just, even though it's kind of a clever solution to the whole thing, it would be kind of dumb for Tony Khan to be saying that if it's actually the name of a faction that's supposed to surprise everybody with a turn. But yeah, it could be many things. Yeah.
And then about the whole, Ray Phoenix versus Jeff Jarrett match. Like, when I first saw that today, I was like, oh, geez, is Tony Khan really mad at Ray Phoenix for whatever happened to Mox? And he's going to lose it to Jeff Jarrett. But that didn't happen. But what do you – I mean, the International Championship was, like, a pretty big fixture when Orange Cassidy was holding it. I mean, what do you think happens with that title? Does it stay with Phoenix? Could Nick Jackson actually hold a singles title, or is it just a placeholder for Mox?
Good question. I don't think the fact that Matt and Nick wrestled separately should be read into, because the four-way was just we're plucking one person from each team from Sunday in a singles match, and, well, Matt's here, so we'll have Matt wrestle too, or Nick wrestle too, I should say. So, I'm all for it. If, you know, I know Nick and Matt are beat up, you know, mentally and physically, I think respectively. Like, I think Matt's just physically beat up and Matt's just spent, you know, I don't know. You hear things. But I'm not against, you know, Nick having a one really hot singles run where he just gets to, you know, shine. It'd be better if it's, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to go down a path of different things, but it'd be good for him to have a spokesman because he's, you know, just great being with a kind of flamboyant, charismatic ring entrances and really good in the ring, so it's better to be a babyface, but he can't come babyface. Promo super well. But as a heel, you know, his style might be too flashy, but he can certainly play the heel well, and I wouldn't be against him. Let's just cut to the chase. A Ray Phoenix, Nick Jackson, if Nick is feeling healthy enough, would be fantastic. But it would be inaudible considering, you know, what happened last week and what I first reported, which was, you know, Moxley was called an audible in that match that the referee got confused on. So I don't know. I don't have a sense of what's next, because it does sort of, I guess my guess would be Rey Fénix is a placeholder and Moxie gets it back and they get back on that course. Tyler, what do you think? I know you were a little out of the loop, but following things from a distance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've always thought Nick Jackson has the potential to have a good run as a singles act, more so than Matt. I mean, obviously, like every brother combo in wrestling history, it seems like one's a good worker and one's a good talker. And if they fuse together as one wrestler, they would be, you know, an all-timer if you look at all the brothers in history. So I think that is some interesting potential. And just really for the belt itself, I think Orange Cassidy showed the highest potential of that belt. And that is a belt that I think most people would agree is not necessary in the slightest in the company structure with way too many belts, including all the Ring of Honor belts. But if you're going to keep it, using it as a proving ground for someone that can they be a top star within the company in a fixture and have a long run with the title. And you can't do that with every single title, right? You got to do it every, you know, fifth person that hold that can have a long run with it or whatever. But it can be a proving ground for that sort of person would be the bullish way to explain that title belt. But yeah, I think it's fine. But I do think you're right, Wade, that if there's some story with this belt and Moxley is healthy and wins it back from Ray, that seems like the most logical thing. It's also a big TV match you can set up. Moxley gets it back, and then whatever story you're going to tell, you can do that. But, you know, ideally merging that with the TNT title at some point and making that the unified undercard belt would be the most awesome thing for me personally.
Yeah. All right, Hendrick, anything else you want to bring up before we move on?
I guess one last thing. You know, I've been a vegan for a while, so MJF trying to make Jay White called a tofu didn't hit for me, so thumbs down on that.
I am a big fan of tofu. I've had really bad tofu and I've had really good tofu, and it absolutely soaks up the flavor. But the argument that, you know, you have to add flavor to tofu, it works with filet mignon, but no one's going to eat that daily. Nor should you, frankly, for health reasons. But but there's a reason ribs have barbecue sauce and chicken is slathered in, you know, barbecue sauce and all that, because everything is better with flavor added to it, and a lot of things are pretty plain without flavor. So my critique as a virtual vegan also for 15 plus years, a little bit of wild fish here and there, is that I mean, it's fine, but yeah, Hendrick, I shared your angst listening to that a little bit, because fried tofu with I mean, I won't even go over all the recipes. It's tofu's so good and it's so healthy and such a great source of protein and a great budget item too, if you don't want to spend money and you don't want to spend a bunch of money on pharmaceuticals for clogged arteries later in life or overdoing it on red meat. There's a lot of good reasons for it, but I thought it worked in a sense as a populist angle, but those of us who have enjoyed tofu over the years in many forms with many flavors soaked into it and a great texture, I could debate MJF on the merits of tofu for health and flavor reasons and texture and all that, but you got to be at the right restaurant or have the right cook, because it's pretty easy to screw up tofu and have it be gross too, as is the case with lots of food. Hendrick, I'm on your side is kind of what I'm saying.
Well, you can screw up meat a lot worse, I'll tell you that much. It can make you sick.
Yeah.
So don't make tofu a bad word. And with that, good night.
I know. Yep, good night. Thanks, Hendrick. All right. Have you had tofu, Tyler?
Oh, yeah. I love tofu. I mean, I'm not a vegan, but, you know, I'm a very adventurous eater. But, yeah, I think you can easily mess up meat. You can overcook it and it's like a brick, and tofu is pretty hard to mess up. It's a very versatile food. So yes, very pro tofu.
Yes. All right. Very good. We'll go to Keith in Virginia next. Keith, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind tonight about Dynamite?
Hey guys, how you doing?
Good.
Good.
So I've been thinking about that angle at the end of Dynamite, and I think I'm already obsessed with it, and not in a good way. I don't think anything good can come out of that. I've batted around in my mind so many different angles. I appreciate your take on it, and it made a lot of sense. But the problem is, it still didn't make sense. because if Adam Cole and his friends were behind that whole thing, when did he concoct the plan? Was it after he helped MJF in the match with Samoa Joe? Was that all part of the long game? Did he decide that within the last week? Why did they beat up Jay White instead of just jumping MJF? A lot of things in there. I have a theory, the one that makes the most sense to me, even though I still think it's probably wrong, and then I have a nightmare scenario. My idea, the one that made the most sense to me, just thinking over the elements, is that it's Stokely Hathaway and some new guys, the 95th faction that they have in the company that they'll introduce. And the reason being, you have the whole synergy between when MJF first debuted his devil mask, it was with the firm and Stokely, and they help him get that chip. And then they kind of turned on them. And so Stokely is still holding a grudge. And the second reason is because if you remember, the guns were part of the firm, were part of the firm, and they turned their back on them and joined Bullet Club Gold. So it would be killing two birds with one stone by increasing the animosity between MJF and Jay White, so they would take each other out, because he has reason to be mad at both of them. That's as far as I got with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there is enough history with MJF and the firm and Stokely as a callback, as an audible, to, you know, provide MJF with something beyond. I mean, you introduced Jay White. Why introduce Jay White in the mix if you're also going to introduce Stokely Hathaway? Because now you got two factions feuding with MJF. But there's a history there. The mass callback is good. When you say when was it decided, I don't think Cole helped MJF enough where you couldn't rule out that Cole, for as a means to an end, maybe helped, you know, like I got to jump on the ring apron late in the match with Joe, and, you know, and shout encouragement to him. But because Cole wants to beat MJF for the title. So it's like, it's in his interest to kind of help MJF keep the title, but he didn't, like, he was late to help. And so it's possible the plan was in place before that, if not well before it, or something he, you know, kind of was debating, and then he's like, all right, I'm going to fake the ankle injury, because it was such a fluky injury. And, you know, it's so weird because it came on the same show as Mox with the concussion. It's like, oh, God, 1-2 punch. But there was suspicion. Well, I shouldn't say suspicion. There wasn't a camera angle of the landing. So, you know, instead of showing a fake bad landing or a pseudo bad landing that actually went bad because he twisted his ankle landing and it actually looked a real injury, it's just like, just land and we'll pretend you twisted it, but we won't have a camera there. I mean, there's all kinds of things we can, you know, Zapruder film and come up with theories. But my thinking is, if what I'm throwing out there happens, I think you can predate it before Grand Slam and it still makes sense. Tyler, what do you think? We're full circle back to Stokely also.
Yeah. No, I definitely lean more. It's Cole in the long con. And it was sometime, you know, right after he lost to MJF that he was like, somewhere deep down inside of him, he knew he made the wrong decision and being his friend, and he lost and he thought he could beat him, whatever. So it all started in that moment. And, if you're him, you want to take the title off of MJF. You don't want to help Samoa Joe beat him and then have to go through Samoa Joe, right? I mean, even if you're Adam Cole, like, there's a matchup issue between you and MJF versus you and Samoa Joe, right? Just from a real sports-like scenario. So if you can play that angle as well. And the big thing of, like, why I think it's that, just from what they're foretelling, you know, the foreshadowing here tonight in the episode, is there's no reason that him and MJF would have hugged and he's like, yeah, go with your friends, I'll be waiting for you. Like, that was too on the nose with the thing at the end there for Cole to walk off with Roddy and Taven and Bennett, for them not all to be in those outfits together at the end of the show. Like, wrestling, even AEW, things like that are done on purpose, and they're not done for no reason. So that's the reason why I'm fully convinced that it's the Kingdom, and they're attacking Jay White to make, you know, to make MJF look bad, and maybe, you know, Bullet Club Gold will screw over MJF at the show on Sunday, so you're not sure who it is, and they'll reveal themselves later on or something like that. But
that's actually a good point, that they've now tricked Bullet Club Gold into costing MJF the ROH tag team title, so MJF can lose a two-on-one match because, you know, Colton and Austin run a ringside, or Juice and Jay, you know, maybe they sell Jay's two beat up for it, so that it, but it's the other three. So yeah, you really have found a way to get the belt off of MJF and Cole without them losing, but you also are delaying the payoff to Cole being with them even longer. So yeah, and then that would make sense. Like, it's the master plan of Cole and company to basically manipulate Jay White into costing MJF the match, because Jay's too naive to real. It would paint him a little naive, like, well, if MJF was going to really attack me, would he really give it away the way that he did with the devil mask? But, you know, I guess you need that as a plot point in pro wrestling context. All right, Keith, back to you.
I see what you guys are saying. And if I were, if it really is Adam Cole behind all this, I would suggest to him that he just kind of cut directly to the chase and just beat up MJF and stop playing wrestling games. But, you know, whatever. my nightmare scenario is you guys were talking about Tony Khan, and he's talking about the end of an era or the beginning of a new era. What if it's Tony Khan behind all this? In a storyline sense, because there were four people beat up Jay White. One stood and supervised. I would think, there were only four. It was like Cole Bennett, Taven, and Roderick Strong. Who's the fourth guy? And even if it's Kyle O'Reilly, why was he just standing there? So who was supervising? The Tony Khan thing is so unfathomable. It's just, it's awful.
A new era. Anyway. A new era. Tony Khan is a heel faction leader.
Yes, a callback to the Undisputed Era and the New World Order and the New Blood. Awful.
I don't think so. But I mean, you know, you've prepared us for something if that happens, so we're less shocked and we have a chance to sleep on it and reconcile the posture. All right, Keith.
That'd be a big moment in AEW history. Not good, but it'd be a big moment.
I mean, he had fun, Stan X Giovanni being a heel, you know, heel for Impact Wrestling. So, you know, I mean, it's a role he enjoyed. Vince McMahon played the heel role in Memphis, you know, quite a bit before he rolled that character out on national television. And it was a Torch cover story. My God, Vince McMahon, the babyface announcer for WWE all these years, goes into heel fantasy camp on Memphis TV. So Tony Khan did the same thing with Impact. So who knows? All right, Keith, appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Talk to you soon. They both play the parts perfectly. MJF is so good as a serious babyface. I stand by my comment from last week. He's the best babyface in wrestling. They clearly set up a hoot. Human character in all of wrestling. I know Wade hates it, but his vulnerability and him being this character it's really great stuff. I wouldn't say I hate it. I just don't know that it's the best thing to drag on and on and on and on and on. And I think Hangman is enough of a talent that having him be mopey and associated with Dark Order, a lower card act, perpetually is not taking full advantage of what Hangman can be. And that's where my critique has been. I have no problem with Hangman being playing up reality or embellishing reality as somebody who battles, you know, depression and you know, trying to drink away his problems and, you know, the crash that happens after you know, using alcohol as a crutch. And then, you know, you wake up and you're more depressed than you would have been if you hadn't, and you still have the same problems and all that. I mean, you can tell that story. It takes away some of the fun of being the beer drinking guy. So you got to take that into consideration. But yeah, I mean, I thought Hangman was really good, and I thought Swerve was really good and shaky. You know, just seemed to have dry mouth and lose his way a couple times and seemed to be maybe feeling the pressure of the moment, or just doesn't have a lot of practice in that exact situation. What do you think of that, Tyler? Expand on Hangman and Swerve.
Yeah. So about that, I mean, when you're reading the email, I don't know if you cut off or I was cutting off, but I heard about 30% of it. But the promo itself, it felt a little bit to me like both of them were having a promo with someone else a little bit, maybe some more Swerve in Hangman, where the rebuttal was just like a laugh. And I think it kind of helped at the end when he was like, hey, maybe I have issues and I make up enemies every day. Like, that kind of helped bring it home for me a little bit of the sort of unhinged aspect of it that the Swerve was going for. I don't think it worked fully for his character, but I think him like telling Prince Nana not to dance was like way more effective than any of his promo was before the commercial break. And you know, Hangman did a good job, like you said earlier, of kind of going from 0 to 60 very quickly and laying out like his issues and saying like, you know, being the baby face and saying like, yeah, you were right, and I appreciate you doing that, but now I'm going to kick your ass because you've unlocked something in me that has been missing, and you're going to be the stepping stone for me to reclaim my spot. So, you know, I think Hangman a little bit more so, and I have high expectations for Swerve in that spot. It didn't hit what I expected of him, but I still think it was solid on both aspects. And you know, just something I was surprised put in the main event. I think that kind of marked my opinion of it too, of thinking something really next level was going to happen. It was more of a standard down the middle, you know, 9:10 Eastern time promo, not a 9:50 Eastern time promo, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think it's sort of irresistible, but I don't know if we needed the Russell Wilson reference, the local thing. I think that
yes.
I mean, I know it's tempting because you're in Denver and you're going to Seattle. I get it. There's a Seattle connection there and all that. But it felt like that just an editor could have been used. And then also, like, Hangman going, every time I get an opportunity, I hit it out of the park. Does that work with, for a year and a half, I've been self-doubting myself. And even before that, it's been one thing after another with me. And I'm just wandering drunk into promos with alcohol in my hand. And I'm hanging out with Dark Order and using them to try to give, you know, I want to be a good, like, I just, there were a lot of, and then the rain analogy, I know you're going to Seattle and it's cloudy there a lot, but it felt like they leaned a little hard, they got that idea, and, oh, I'm going to weather the storm, and then the storm is going to wash over me, and it washed things out of me, and those things that it washed out of me are good things. I just, the metaphor just kind of, I thought, got a little unwieldy by the halfway point, and they just kept going with it. So again, there was, you know, I like, if I didn't understand English, I'd be like, Hangman, man, that guy is likable and got fired up at the end, and I'm going to be with this guy. But when you listen to what he said, it just felt like more complicated than it needed to be. And I'm still, I think they had like three, four themes and metaphors going on. Let's rip on Russell Wilson, do a little localized stuff. We're going to do the it's rainy in Seattle, and there's been a dark cloud hanging for Hangman, so we're going to do that. And then he got Swerve saying, I want your spot. And then he got Hangman saying, you hit home with some of the things you said about me. And that made me think in this last couple of weeks, and now here's what I have to say for it. I just wish they picked one of those and just went with it and kept it simpler. I just think there are too many things at play that all kind of had equal time. And to me, just Swerve telling Hangman, I want your spot, great. Or Hangman says, yes, you've made me, brought to the forefront that I've been doubting myself. I've been going through things, and you, I thank you for that. But unfortunately, you're now going to be the victim of me being motivated and getting back on track. Swerve goes, no, I played mind games. Your self-doubt is going to be increased after Sunday night when I beat you. I mean, I just think they could have kept it simpler, stripped away three out of the four elements, or just touched on them, but really focused on one of them and ended up with a better promo. I felt like this felt like three promos kind of meshed together. Enough where if you liked it, I get it, because there are aspects to like, but between delivery and the too many things going on and some a little bit contradictory or clunky, kept it from being the home run that I wish it was.
Yeah, and it's just keep it simple on both fronts. Like Paige needs to say in some way, shape, or form, you know, outside the ring, I've been, you know, not been doing well, and that's been shown, and you've proven that. But in the ring, the entire time I've been proving it, and I'm a top guy in this business, and you've unlocked, you know, me walking around here and my ring gear, my presentation, and these what these fans deserve, you've unlocked. But I've always been the best, you know, fighter in this company. I'm going to prove it to you on Sunday. And then Swerve, the whole thing is like, you know, I'm beating you for that spot. Like if they both focused on those things, and I think it would have been a lot more successful as opposed to what you're laying out there. It's kind of like if you put in, give me a wrestling promo from a, you know, 11th grade English AP writing class. That's kind of what they got and tried to mix it together, and it didn't work very well.
The White MJF stuff earlier, I mean, Jay White was great. MJF was great in many ways. But he lost me a little bit, or started thinking, nope, you're you know, like lane assist is beeping in your modern car. Like you're getting out of the Zant loan a little bit. Swerve back in the dotted lines when he said that you are nothing more than intelligently produced mass market version of what someone in Japan thinks is a top guy. I don't think that rings true. I mean, he is tailor-made for U.S. television. I mean, he's a smaller guy. You know, in WWE, that probably would have held him back. I mean, just being, you know, blunt, I mean, whatever, just, you know, reality check, he probably would be too small to be a heel in WWE. And I talked to someone in WWE who, you know, kind of, you know, was resigned to that likelihood. But in AEW, I mean, he can stand there and be a little bit taller than MJF, and it doesn't matter that he's skinny, because Adam Cole is skinny, and Bryan Danielson isn't a muscle guy, and on and on. You know, I mean, you know, Kenny Omega would be small in WWE, probably a little bit shorter than LA Knight, and LA Knight's not a monster. But, you know, in AEW, it works. So, I mean, but Jay White's traits beyond the size is not a Japanese like mass market thing. I just don't think that rings true. Second of all, what does it matter? Like the story more often, if not always, should move away from tailoring to the smart internet fan that you're hitting refresh and reading and gets in your head too much during the week, and focus more on that big, massive audience that wants to be pulled into this idea that these fighters are fighting to win matches with personality clashes, not trying to sell the most T-shirts, have the best catchphrase, or be a top guy because they're propped up by a promoter. And Michael Cole has been really good about this lately, because he's been saying, you know, LA Knight needs to win matches if he wants to be a top guy. You know, that's like been a thing he's been saying. He said about somebody else this past week too. Like, it doesn't matter if you talk a good game if you don't win once the bell rings. And I want MJF to bring, not even bring it back, just stop straying away from the idea of the promo isn't about who's going to be the top draw or picked by the promoter or who was manufactured for marketing. Keep that stuff off television and have MJF focus more on what he accomplishes in the ring, because frankly, that's one of his strengths that he doesn't shine a spotlight on at all, is how good he is in the ring. And so I would have rather had a promo where he's like, Jay White, I've watched your matches. They're great. You fought some great wrestlers. I've been over here doing my thing. It's like, you know, the old American National League game, World Series, where you're like, I can't wait to see this great pitcher from the National League pitch against this great batter from the American League. Now there's so many interleague games, it's less so, but it's still there. Even with the NBA, I mean, you don't play, if you're in the Western Conference, you don't see the East Coast teams as much as the West Coast teams. So play that up. Go, you've been on your track. We're only a couple years apart in age, and you've been doing great things against great opponents. I've studied you, and I know I'm better than you. And, you know, you talk a great game, and people love you, and I get that. Like, but make it about two great athletes who have been on parallel but tracks on opposite sides of the ocean meeting. And you know, MJF can do that in a babyface way, and Jay White can be a punk about it, and you can resent him for his cockiness and the way he delivers his message. But I'd much rather have that, again, than, you know, you were manufactured as somebody's dream of a top guy. Like, he's a top guy because he beat top people, not because some promoter decided. I think you want to stay away from that stuff, Tyler, even alluding to it. Even if that's what you're absorbed in 6 days and 22 other hours of your week because you're hitting refresh on social media and reading Reddit and reading websites and listening to podcasts, and that's all anyone talks about in a smart fan way. With all the respect to our audience, you should not be talking to us exclusively, or you certainly shouldn't be talking to us in a way that's counterproductive to the other 90% or 96% or whatever it is, you know? I mean, so anyway, Tyler.
Yeah, and if you want to do that, same thing we were talking about with Swerve and Paige, is you kind of said that already if you're MJF with the tofu versus filet line of, you know, you kind of add flavor, and you kind of alluded to that, like, he needs the entrance and the affiliation with the group and the great competition in the ring to be that flavorful piece of tofu, right? So to say it, like, kind of, you know, poetically, if you will, there, and then to say it explicitly a couple lines later doesn't help the promo when you kind of reiterate the same point over and over again. And I agree on the broader point, but just the structure of the promo too, I don't think it helps. You kind of got to choose to do it one way or the other and not do it both. But also, like, logically, as I'm sitting there as a fan, I'm thinking, well, Roman Reigns is the manufacturing, is the perfect, you know, built in the lab version of what Vince McMahon thinks is a top wrestler. And, you know, he's right. So was John Cena. So was Hulk Hogan at the time. You know, so was The Rock. Like, that is not a very good argument for a babyface to be like, hey, you're exactly what someone would build in the lab to be a great pro wrestler. And, like, if you make that point, you then have to make the correlation of, like, and I'm not. I'm, you know, I was the skinny Jewish kid who got bullied and no one, you know, everyone said I couldn't be a wrestler and I worked my way up and proved it in the ring. And, you know, if you want to go that angle, you got to expound upon it and prove that you're the underdog that made it if you're the babyface. Not, you know, that's kind of where the instincts things come in with MJF at this point as a babyface, is to go that next step. Like, as a heel, I think you would take that angle and go the opposite way. If someone was doing a face promo against him and they were talking, I think he'd give them that tip. But, like, as himself in that role, I think he's learning that on the fly here. And I think in a year he might use that logic, but we're just not there yet because, you know, he's naturally talented and people love him. And, like, we talked about, like, saying, like, you know, these are my pores. Like, that's a great line for a babyface in the MJF character. Like, he's got good instincts on that aspect, but the structure of a promo, it's very hard for him not to be like, I won that promo. Because, like, the heel in this capacity, the first meeting, like, should probably win the promo if you're booking it correctly.
Yeah.
If you're booking promos like matches, like, Jay White should win and MJF should want to prove it to him in the ring that he can beat him. So that's a long diatribe there, but
and go back to the tofu thing too. Like, Jay White, first of all, it doesn't ring true. Jay White doesn't need to be part of a faction to be, you know, to extend the analogy, full of flavor. I mean, like, Jay White just, it just exudes. Like, if you cut that promo on Roderick Strong, okay. You know, let's say Roderick Strong with bombastic personalities and he's the stoic, bland guy who's just really good and carries himself in a serious way. But that's, like, nobody's – I just don't – it didn't ring true to me as he was saying, yeah, you need the ring entrance and all the people surrounding you. It's like, Jay White is freaking – black boots, black trunks, no ring robe, no music. You hand him a mic or you just watch him strut to the ring, that's a star. So it just didn't ring true. You know, honestly, MJF's closer to the tofu than Jay White when you, I mean, and neither of them are. But I, like, Jay White just is, like, almost the worst person to use that on. It's like he had an idea and he just sort of forced it onto something that I don't think people watching Jay White think, yeah, it's all the external stuff that makes him interesting. So I don't like that either. Plus, even if it's true, Jay White should go, it doesn't matter what you think about what it takes for me to seem exciting, I'm going to kick your ass. My resume of people I beat in this business is way bigger than yours. And we know in this business you can be bombastic and lose all your matches and never be a star. And if you win your matches, people are going to pay to see you. And I got both, baby. Like, I mean, I don't know. I think you needed somebody on the outside looking at that going, let's edit this. And this is a cool idea, but let's save it for another day with a different opponent and let's stay focused. I think both talking segments, you know, the big ones needed that, both that we talked about here from Zach's email. So I get people liking them, but I have my critiques, and I think there were some ideas mm-hmm. that needed to be edited out. All right, Azana St. Louis, I'm not going to get to every call and every email, and we really have to wrap up here for a variety of reasons. Azana St. Louis says, which thing do you think is most likely Sunday, Nick Wayne turning on Ellen or Edge showing up? What do you think, Tyler?
So I would say Nick Wayne turning on Darby is just more likely, right, than AEW signing a WWE Hall of Famer the first day that they possibly can in a pay-per-view where, you know, it just, I mean, I think both are pretty likely. One of the two is probably going to happen, but just logistically, like, Nick Wayne's on the roster and Adam Copeland is not today. So I'm just going to play the odds there. But I think Copeland being there is very much potential. But I think if he does there, like, if you're telling the story, I think him helping Darby win makes a lot more sense than him aligning with Christian. Like, him going immediately as a heel, I don't know. I think him and Christian is a money match. But, you know, even then, like, I don't think it's a good idea, period, for him to be in the company as a wrestler. But, you know, that's another point entirely. So
you don't think Nick Wayne?
No,
or
no.
Adam Copeland. Gotcha. Okay. So with all the things Christian said about Nick Wayne's mom, I mean, you almost need Nick Wayne's mom to show up and just make out with Christian on television. If you want to have a, because how can Nick Wayne, I mean, I guess it's an ultra heel if you align with somebody who said the things that Christian has said about his mom, but mm-hmm. like, so, I mean, I guess that works if you're a heel, but it's just hard to imagine if Christian was really going to end up recruiting Nick Wayne, that would make sense, that he would be so
yeah.
like, if he thinks he can be a good mentor for Nick Wayne, maybe leave his mom out of it, you know, or I don't know. Nick Wayne might be a fabulous heel. I think it feels like that might be rushing it a little, turning him heel, but maybe he can be their new Dominic. Number two, mm-hmm. it's no secret. Wheeler Yuta isn't the most popular guy among fans, but he knows his character and shows more energy than other locker room members. Yeah, I was glad Yuta didn't do this with his voice and, like, just lose control of his faculties. I thought it was a good in-your-face promo from him, and, you know, I don't think this show needed this match. I don't think WrestleDream needed Ricky Starks on it. Doesn't have Miro or Powerhouse. I mean, we can list people who aren't on it. Didn't need this match. I'd save it for a TV show. Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a thanks to Ricky for losing some big matches, and he gets that one win on pay-per-view, like the Jericho win, that is going to be forgotten. But it's a way to keep him happy, I think, is what this is more than anything. And, you know, if I'm from the Yuta perspective, like, I eventually want him and Claudio to feud if you're going to do something with Yuta, because it feels like he's in a dangerous territory where, and he might be totally fine with this, but he's, like, forever going to be the other guy. And the gatekeeper for the company. And, you know, I don't think Wheeler Yuta is going to be a world champion or anything, but, you know, if you're him, you're really getting into a rut as it is with your character within AEW. Cause he just feels like he's always going to lose matches like this, you know, 10 years from now, if he's still with the company. So, just from his perspective, I'd be a little worried for my placement, but, you know, I'm not him. So.
All right, Azan in St. Louis says, what do you guys think about this idea that the mystery men backstage were the kingdom? Roddy and Cole Carter, Griff Garrison. Griff, there's a comma issue here. Sorry, Azan, to call you out. What do you guys think about this idea that the mystery men backstage were the kingdom? Roddy and Cole Carter, Griff Garrison, and Roddy were dressed up as the devil lately on ROH. Cole and Griff Garrison have been teaming under Maria Kanellis. I don't know. That's a lot going on there, but... if you add Cole Carter and Griff Garrison to the mix and you have an ROH storyline and faction closing out Dynamite before a pay-per-view with a payoff being a storyline that almost nobody has seen, including me, please no. I mean, but I guess I'll have to wait to see if that is it, if they can make it work. Tyler?
Yeah, and I want to go back and watch this too. I know you do too. But you know, the one caller says there were five people. I think there were only four. I think it was three people beating up the devil character. But I could definitely be.
don't hate it or love it. Yeah, Tyler.
And that was Captain Insano, right? Not Paul White. So just to clarify. So.
The idea that, yes, there was a point to the skit, yes, absolutely. I mean, this was MGF going, I having more than one friend isn't for me. But if that's what, but if that's normal, MGF really is leaning into this idea that he's this naive guy who's been such a jerky, he's had no friends until Cole. So Cole turning on him can be this just major pivot point in his character's history. The problem is that it's such a zany, slapsticky way that they've gone about it in, the awful DX Shawn Michaels, late era DX skits. Can you pivot from something so clearly a mini movie, early 90s WCWS thing where you had the little people running from a boat as Vader was trying. I mean, it was just like, look it up online and Davey Lloyd, whatever, I wouldn't say he was running on the beach because that isn't running, but he was moving fast. It was just weird. It was just like this fever dream, weird stuff that they were experimenting with back in the day. What was Ole Anderson's now I can't think of the name of the woman who got blamed for some of those bad ideas. Anyway, listen to the 90s past cast. They've covered it. So it's hard for you want to have your cake and you want to eat it too, in the sense that, oh, we're going to entertain people with zaniness, mid-card shtick that shows our range, our comedic, and it's amusing and all that. But when the turn happens, we want you to be totally invested in it. And it's a big turning point in MJF and all that, and have your emotions wrapped up in it. I don't know that if it's not undercutting that. And then, the little Paul White thing they couldn't resist at the end, or the alleged, not. Okay, I do think Righteous's cult-like persona provides a good foil to MGF's devil character. They want to eliminate the devil and the reformed MGF, as they specifically mentioned fake people in their pre-tape. Did you, were you able to extrapolate anything from, this is like the Bray Wyatt and House of Black stuff, where, do I want to spend time trying to figure out what it means when it says lie and LOL on the little cutout figures of construction paper, or am I wasting my time because they just did it for effect but it won't have a payoff? I don't know. But I don't think the Righteous are going to feud with MJF long term. I think they're just trying to get the belts off of MJF and Cole in a way that doesn't affect Cole and MJF, especially MJF. And I wouldn't read more into it because I don't think it's a sustained feud. But I could be wrong. Tyler?
Yeah, I wouldn't read into it. Vincent is a big Rob Zombie movie fan, a big horror movie fan. So I think he just likes that aesthetic. And, he's obviously doing the Charlie Manson thing. He's been doing that for a long time. So I think it's just more that sort of amalgamation of kind of B horror movies and Charlie Manson combined. So the writing on the wall could be literally, a grocery order if you zoomed in on it, sort of thing. So I wouldn't look too much into that. I think it's just more of a vibe that he's trying to put off there. So.
Yeah. All right. Azan, I do not want, or JB, excuse me, I do not want to discourage your emails bring up lots of different points, but tonight we have gone long and we both have to wrap up. So I apologize to callers we didn't get to and the emailers and the parts of emails we didn't get to. But it was great hearing from some first time callers and we had a lot to explore in today's show. Tyler, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.
You bet. We'll talk to y'all.